One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
Joy is an act of political and spiritual resistance. And if you create some joy, even in the darkest hours, you can find some light.
Welcome to the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
Today, we talk about the Republican budget abomination, attacks on the Department of Education, and the rising resistance to the Trump-Musk regime.
Then joining us for our interview is the always inspiring champion for workers, families, and our children, American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten.
I'm Jessica Craven.
I'm Steve Pearson. Jessica, how are you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you doing?
It's always the question.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. We have, I got to say, a really amazing interview on today's show. If people don't know Randy Weingarten, I mean, most people do. She's been president of AFT for a long time, but we covered so much ground about resilience, about building community, about hope and joy in this movement, and you know, about what you can do to support labor organizing. And she's just an incredible human. I'm so grateful that she was here on this show. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear it. And she is incredible. She's one of the, you know, many women largely who have stood up in this moment and just like flexed their incredible power. I love listening to her and I'm very excited to hear the interview. Again, I was sorry I couldn't be there.
You were missed. But What was your week like? I know you were busy, but did you do anything for yourself? Do you have any downtime at all to enjoy? The weather's been incredible this last week here in SoCal.
Yeah, it's been beautiful. I had family in town and, this weekend I actually took it off largely. I did a little work on my Sunday newsletter because that good news newsletter has to go out. But I largely took it off. I took a nap, which I almost never do. And I've decided to delve back
I'm
into
very
TED.
Pro nap, by the way.
I know. My husband is also. He's like a daily napper. I never nap. This last week wore me out, as I think it did all of us. I watched some Ted Lasso. I've gone back to Ted Lasso. You know, I think in moments like this, we need those feel-good, really feel-good, almost to the point of being saccharine, but not quite, shows and things like that. So that's where I'm at. What about you?
Oh, I dread the toss to me on this because we have been watching Love is Blind. Okay, I said it. Throw the shade as much as you want, but
I mean it's a popular show. People love it, right?
it's a weird show, but it's talk about unplugging and just going to a whole different place.
You have to.
Yeah, Yeah. But Melinda and I went on a really nice hike on Sunday. And I know that there's been a lot of really extreme and terrible weather all over the country. And we're very fortunate that we've had some nice weather here in Southern California. But any chance to get out in nature a little bit is really important right now. So recommend that.
Yeah. These are the things that are going to keep us going during this very difficult time. I mean, it sounds dumb, but the moments of rest are just as important as the moments of resistance. Like, it really, they are connected. So moments taking hikes with your loved ones and cuddling with the dog or, you know, watching Ted Lasso, whatever. Love is blind. No, I'm joking. That too.
So just to really recap, important. Hiking and love is blind. That's how we get through this. Okay, moving on. all right. Well, let's definitely move on from that and get to chopping some wood and carrying some water. We as we're recording this yesterday, had the House budget resolution, which almost didn't pass, then passed this budget abomination. What can you tell us about that?
I mean, it was such a bait and switch, you know, it always is with these guys. And I don't know, it's a little bit like Lucy with the football. Like, you always feel like maybe this time they're going to do the right thing. And we had, you know, four Republican House members yesterday morning on the record as being definite no's. And then, you know, huge amounts of town halls last week, very loud call volume. Like, there is no question of what constituents want in this moment. It is just that Republican lawmakers decided that they were uninterested in listening to their constituents, and they listened instead to Trump, who I think spent the day yesterday on the phone threatening, doing whatever he does. And all of them, except for Thomas Massey, changed their votes at the last minute. And Thomas Massey, before people start, you know, calling him and thanking him, largely, you know, he's a deficit hawk, and he's right that this is going to blow up the deficit, but also it doesn't make cuts big enough for him. So, you know, he wants to go way bigger on cutting the Medicaid and the, you know, children's food assistance and all that. So he's not a hero necessarily, but at least he is right about one thing. By his projections, this is going to blow up the deficit by $20 trillion. That's on the high end, but he's probably not wrong. And he won't vote for it. So at least there's one Republican who has like the courage of their convictions. One.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to shout out Representative Brittany Pedersen, too, who posted a picture of her newborn son, who's exactly a month old yesterday, I guess.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people don't know who she is. She's a representative from Colorado, and actually had the opportunity to meet her when she was just getting started at freshman orientation a few years back, and her husband.
Nice.
And interviewed her on How We Win. And she is a really amazing person and has a really unique story, an unlikely person to end up in Congress, and just an inspiring individual. And of course, was part of a bipartisan push for remote voting for women who have just had kids, you know. And that was squashed by the Republicans, by Mike Johnson. So she had to come in with her 1-month-old baby to make this vote, and she did. And so kudos to her, and congratulations to her family on the beautiful young son.
Yeah, those pictures went viral, as well they should, that she did have to fly in for it. And because she flew in for it, Republicans literally won by a single vote. You know, anytime anybody thinks, well, is it worth it for me to go out and canvass for that, you know, swing district? It is, because these things are coming down to a single vote.
Yeah. And you said it. You said it. This is wildly unpopular with voters, with Americans. It's simple. Don't take away our health care. No one wants their health care to be taken away. And these cuts to Medicaid are not just going to affect people who are on Medicaid, but they're going to shut down hospitals and health centers in rural areas because they rely on that funding. And so this is a very unpopular and You know, these Republicans in swing districts who voted to slash your health care are going to be hearing about it. But let's not get ahead of ourselves because, we're going to take that to the midterms, of course. But this isn't done yet. There's still more to do. This was the first vote. So what can we do?
Right. Well, and I wanted to, because I have a family member who last night was like, well, there goes my Medicaid. And I was like, no. So it is, this vote is really upsetting and there is no taking that away. But I do want people to understand, if you are someone who is like really going to be affected by this, this has not happened yet. This was a first step in a multi-step process. This has to now, they've got to go back to the Senate and craft some sort of similar bill, because ultimately the Senate and the House have to have the identical bill for this reconciliation to work. So now the Senate has to agree on this bill, and then they've got it. It's a quite a complex process. So we actually have many, many steps to disrupt this. And Trump came out yesterday saying he doesn't want cuts to Medicaid. I mean, the truth of the matter is, Steve, the math does not add up. They can't. Yeah. Get to $4.5 trillion in tax cuts for the top 0.1%, which is what they want, without either cutting so dramatically and hurting Americans so badly or just blowing up the deficit. My guess is, in the end, they'll just end up blowing up the deficit. And this is really ironic coming from the quote unquote deficit hawk party.
Yeah.
But they might, I know they're coming for Social Security. What I am encouraging people to understand about this, while this has not happened and we're going to fight like hell to stop it, is that theoretically they can pass this without any Democrats because they're using reconciliation, which requires a simple majority vote. We've got to peel away some Republicans. And so it's going to require a continuous noise for at least a month, if not more. And that's just what it's going to require. But we're not there yet. So if anybody says like, oh, I'm losing my Medicaid today, you're not.
Right.
You're not. So
the fight
fortunately,
goes on.
The fight goes on. And we are going to fight. And Republicans have said, because last week they got barraged by town halls, that they're going to just stop doing town halls. That's their response. Not we're going to change our policies, but we're just going to make ourselves more unavailable. But I trust, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, I trust in you guys to find creative ways to make your voices heard.
Yeah, and, we can talk about it briefly now, because what happens then and what we will be doing is empty chair town halls.
Absolutely.
Right? So when these Republican members decide they're not going to have a town hall, then we bring healthcare advocates and we bring people who are affected by this and real people to tell their stories and share, how this is going to affect their lives. And those have been very effective in the past. Those were actually key to our push to save our healthcare back in 2017, when they were trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And,
yep.
And we stopped them then. So, this is, like you said, part of the process. And, it's hard not to live and die with each win and loss. And this was certainly disappointing. We thought we had a couple of Republicans who were going to vote against it, but we're still going to fight.
Right. And it's, Steve, to me, I was saying this in my newsletter this morning, it's so clarifying. And in a way, I mean, I don't want any more clarity about who Republicans are. I feel that I have enough. But maybe some Americans really need to see this, because you can't justify this budget through a Christian lens, right? Oh, they all claim to be Christians, except that this budget deliberately sets out to hurt the most vulnerable people, children, babies.
Literally taking food out of babies' mouths.
Out of babies' mouths. It hurts veterans. It hurts, women and families. I mean, it's brutal, right? So you get to remove the Christian justification, it's gone. And then the deficit hawk justification, you cannot claim to care about, Democrats are the tax and spend people. Are you kidding me? Like, who is spending now? And so you peel those things away, and Republicans are just laid bare for who they are. Their constituents in their minds are the Elon Musks, the 800 or whatever billionaires there are in our country, and the biggest corporations in the country. That's it. That's who they work for. And that's who they're working for right now. Everything else is bullshit. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Just sorry, but it just is. So
well said.
Thank you. Sometimes
no
you just
need
have
to
curse.
Apologize for being very clear and using the right language.
All
right. Well, let's speaking of Elon Musk and Doge and Trump. You know, that he was trying to do this before, but there's attacks on the Board of Education now, and Linda McMahon's confirmation hearing is coming up. I do want to talk about this because, of course, we have the president of AFT as our interview, and she's been fighting for education for our families and for our kids her entire life. And these attacks on education from Republicans have been going on for decades and decades. Let's be clear about this. This has been this isn't just like Elon or Trump and some new thing. They're super dumb about it. They're super overt about it. All of this, they could have been way sneakier and more effective about it. And that gives me a little bit of hope, their approach. But, this is... The Republicans want their electorate controlled. They want them indoctrinated, and they want them dumb, frankly. And this is, you know, part of how they stay in power. And this is how fascists rise to power, is by, you know, attacks on education. So what's coming up, and what can we do about it?
Well, and also I will just interject, it's about Christian nationalism, right? Because they want kids going to they want them indoctrinated, but also just the brutal simple fact that you can't profit off of public education. They like charter schools because you can profit off of those, but they don't like just public schools. There's no grift in, I mean, probably there is a little bit, but like they want to privatize, right? And so this is all about privatization. But it's also a disaster for students with disabilities. And again, like people with disabilities are getting hammered by Republicans right now. Hammered. Everything from the attacks on Medicaid, the attacks on Section 504, the attacks on the Board of Education. People with disabilities in this country are being brutalized. And this is just one more example of that, because, of course, the Department of Education makes sure that students with disabilities can receive the services they need. That doesn't happen in little Christian charter schools. That happens in regular public schools. So, it's very it would be a catastrophic mistake. So
I'm glad you brought that up. Let me just interject really quick because, you know, our daughter was a preemie. She was just a pound and a half when she was born. And and she's doing amazing now. She's 22 years old and about to graduate from college. She's actually like on the provost list. She's a straight A student. But, you know, she is where she is because of the early intervention that we had through IEPs and the assistance that we got, and the specialized education plans that she was able to access because of that. And that has just been decimated by Elon Musk and Doge. And they have, you know, fired all the people who are administrating IEPs and their guys to get rid of DEI, you know, and all of that. They have decimated that, and it's doing so much damage, and my daughter would not be where she is right now if it wasn't for that. So that's deeply personal to me and incredibly infuriating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got relatives whose kids had IEPs also. I mean, I'm a public school person. I went to public school. My kid goes to LAUSD schools. Like, I believe in the public school experiment so deeply. And yeah, it is. It is from the IEP perspective, from the civil rights perspective. My kid is queer. They came out as queer in the fifth grade. They were like, I like girls. I get crushes on girls. And they went to schools where their civil rights were protected. Mm-hmm. Where no one was allowed to call them names or be awful about that, because there are civil rights protections. All of that goes away with the eradication of the Department of Education and all these other attacks. And, you know, you may not care because you may not have a queer kid. No, I'm not talking to you, Stephen, but someday this will come home to roost with a kid you love. It is just a matter of time.
Yep.
So, yeah. So they've got a two-prong approach to this. You know, Republicans keep introducing bills to abolish the U.S. Department of Education. They've got one H.R. 899 that would do that. Hopefully those don't get passed, because we still have we have enough senators, Democratic senators, that we would filibuster anything like that. But Linda McMahon, you know, Trump has said, I want her confirmed because I want her to make the department I'm putting her in obsolete. I want her to destroy it from the inside. And Linda McMahon is a woman with no scruples, with a very, very sordid past herself. And there's like weird sexual abuse allegations. Like, it gets real gross with her. And it's so insulting to our educators and our students and people who work in support of these people. The education should be our top priority in this country. And what Trump is saying basically is, fuck it. We don't care about it. We have nothing but scorn for it. And it's just, again, like they're showing us who they are. It's very, very clear. But we should fight this and like fight it like hell. Honestly, it's life or death for a lot of kids. So we should fight it, and we will.
We will. We will. You know, and that's another thing that we can all agree on is wanting to protect our kids. And Randy talks about it a bit in an interview, but on Tuesday, March 4th, AFT is launching Protect Our Kids rallies all over the country. You can go to aft.org/protectourkids. And we'll have the link to that in our show notes as well, and sign up to participate. We're going to get out in the streets and make some noise about this to make sure that we protect, like you said, public education.
Yeah, I think there's another march on March 4th. Isn't there also like a big, I think there's just a lot of marches coming up, which is great. That is what we need to be out in the street. And then the Tesla takeovers, I'm going to one this Sunday. Like those are still happening and it's good.
Oh, me too. Maybe we're going to the same one. I don't want to say where it is, but you know, maybe I'll see you there.
Okay, I hope so. You probably are. And that's great. Yeah. We should be there. We should all be there. It is important to keep attacking Tesla. Because its stocks are continuing to fall. I think Elon Musk's lost something like $30 billion in net worth this week, which is, for him, pocket change. But it's good. It's good. We should keep hitting him in his pocket.
Hitting him. Yeah. The other thing I should mention before we move on is this Friday is the economic blackout. Do you want to talk briefly about that? Because we really want everyone to participate in that.
Yeah, please do. I mean, this is just a one day where you don't shop. If you are going to shop, you are going to shop from small businesses, you know, farmers markets, whatever, small independent grocery stores are fine, but no big businesses, no Amazon, and in general, like just no big purchases, no shopping. I was just talking to MJ this morning about, you know, encouraging their friends to not go to Starbucks. I was like, you guys can go to a little local place, but like try to stay away from the big chains for that one day. And MJ was like, oh yeah, I'm going to tell them. But, you know, I heard somebody say, well, you know, but this is not, we need to do like a year long. The Montgomery bus boycott was a full year. And that is true. But I did see somebody else argue, but it started with one day. And Americans are really addicted to shopping. So if we can sort of show that Americans will stop for one day, or I mean, it won't be all of us, but a big chunk of us will stop for one day. It's a proof of concept. And it's really important.
So, yeah, and I saw it on Yahoo News, and you know, it's out there, just even outside of our, sometimes some of these, you know, actions kind of feel like they're in our activist bubble a little bit, and they don't get out into the, you know, media. Like getting that earned media is part of the big point of these actions, and it's definitely out there. So
I agree. Very important. So we're going to plan all our stuff in advance so that we don't spend anything on that day.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. So tomorrow, when this drops, is Thursday. So if you're listening to this now, do all your shopping and and stock up. All right. So you've got your marching orders. All those links will be in our show notes. Let's talk about our reasons for hope. Jess, what's your reason for hope this week?
Okay, well, there's a lot to choose from because I felt like I really started to see an upswelling this week that I found really exciting. But what I'm going to focus on actually, it starts out as a negative, which is that on Saturday or Sunday, we started to see this video go viral of this woman, Teresa Borenpaul. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. In Idaho, she was in Coeur d'Alene. There was a Republican Party town hall of some kind, and she was protesting very peacefully and was literally sort of dragged out hogtied. Like, it was a very brutal video, very painful to watch, and outrageous on many fronts. The people who were in there who did not stand up for her, it was just bad. I'm sure you've all seen it, so I won't describe it. So that part was really chilling and upsetting, but what I found heartening was the response afterwards. The absolute outrage that this thing met. The guy who was on the stage, the MC, I forget his name, but he, you know, got so much flack so quickly on every, he's a voice narrator. So he had a public website. He's, you know, does a bunch of books on tape. Every aspect of his public facing persona, he had to shut down because people just went rightly, I'm sorry, after him. But, you know, he called her a little girl and said, "We don't care about your voice." He was gross.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then, yeah, you know, just people started trolling the state of Iowa's tourism website. Like, it was just this, and then it also initiated this huge conversation about the silence of the people in that room and what we would do instead. And really got people thinking about, like, sure, your first instinct may be to freeze, but get ready. Do better than those people did. And I found it heartening to hear people sort of rise up in outrage. You want to see outrage. You don't want to see passivity in the face of something like that. And I just heard every woman in the country basically just go like, "Oh, hell no." And really start to fight back. And the private security company lost its business license within a day. You know, obviously, it doesn't fix what happened. I'm sure that what's-her-name, Teresa, is also going to sue. There is a GoFundMe to cover her legal expenses, which has over $250,000 raised already. It's it's just encouraging to see the backlash. And I think it's fueling everybody's rage and their desire to sort of fight back in this moment. So I'm not glad it happened, but I am glad and hopeful at the response. So that's mine. What about yours?
Yeah. I was just address that for a second though, because I was watching the video and there was a lot that was horrifying about it. But to me, the most chilling and horrifying thing was the inaction, you know, by people around, you know,
who were just,
you know, watching and letting that happen and sitting on their hands. So I'm glad this discussion is you know out there and people, as we are going into more town halls and you know like we've been talking about. Need to think about what they would do in that situation. And we need to stand up for each other. So that's cool. My reason for hope was, I saw many people saw this at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. This last week, someone hacked into the TV monitors and played an AI generated video of Trump kissing Elon Musk's toes with a caption that said, "Long live the real king." And I wouldn't normally like be saying this is what's giving me hope. you know, it was definitely like a deep troll. And but I actually, it gave me a lot of hope because I think ridicule is a really important and good way to stand up to these wannabe authoritarians.
You know,
they are only as powerful as we make them. They only have the power that we give them.
Yep.
And the knowledge also that there is, you know, folks within the agency who are in open rebellion and even have the courage to do something like this and put that out there, that gives me a lot of hope because we're always wondering, like, what's going on behind the scenes? What are these, you know, agency members who are being fired or have to, you know, kiss the ring? What are they doing? And so that was really encouraging beyond it just being really fucking hilarious too. Yeah. And the fact that they couldn't figure out where it was coming from. So they had to send someone around to literally unplug all the monitors because they couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss to whoever did that. But it also just really gave me hope because this is the attitude we need to have. You know, we take all of this seriously, but these are dumb people. These are dumb people, you know, overreaching. And, you know, we're not going to let them get away with it. And you know, we need to ridicule them when we have the opportunity to.
Yeah. And they're also deeply insecure people. Like, these are the most fragile egos God has ever created, if you believe God is creating people and their egos. So they do. Like, I didn't hear a peep out of Team Trump about that video. I didn't hear any response at all. But you know that had to drive him crazy. And by the way, you and everybody else have reported this as Trump kissing Elon Musk's toes. It is more than kissing. It is
He's sucking on his toes.
I actually
changed the script a little bit because I'm like, do I want to be? But that's what he's doing. It's pretty gross. And for those on YouTube who get to see it up over my shoulder right now, yet again, I apologize. But it's a disturbing image. But you know, it's actually the right amount of disturbing. That's the other thing that's kind of brilliant about whoever did it, because it's not pornographic.
No.
It's not like, you know, really inappropriate to have on, you know, for someone to see, but it's really gross. Like it's really unsettling. So again, chef's kiss to whoever did it. It was just the perfect balance.
100%. Bravo. Bravo, bravo. It was a great way to start the week. Monday morning, first thing, I was like, oh, I love you. Whoever you are, I love you. It's probably a woman, I have to say, but it's just my guess.
Yeah, likely. Yeah. All right. So those are our reasons for hope. And now let's kick it to our really hopeful interview with Randy Weingarten.
Yes.
Randy Weingarten is president of the American Federation of Teachers, a union 1.8 million strong, representing workers in education, healthcare, and public services. Prior to her election as AFT president in 2008, she served for 11 years as president of the United Federation of Teachers, AFT Local 2. Randy taught high school history in the 90s, worked as a lawyer for a Wall Street firm in the 80s, and was included in Washingtonian's 2022 Most Influential People. Randy, thank you so much for being here. It's really great to meet you.
Thank you, Steve. And I love reading your skeets on Blue Sky. So from me, I am tickled to be on your podcast.
Wow, that's high praise. I feel like I'm a very bad skeeter. I'm a better re-skeeter than I am a skeeter myself. But so before we get into everything, you've been a lifelong advocate for educators, students, workers' rights. What inspired you to get involved in union leadership? And like, what have you learned about organizing and winning tough fights that's most important for us to know right now?
So I know this, and this is not kind of false modesty. This is just, I never wanted to be in front. I always wanted to be the worker bee in back. And so I actually resisted being in front. I like advising people. But what essentially happened back from high school is that there was a sense of injustice. And I grew up with a sense of, I'm Jewish. I grew up with a sense of tikkun olam, which is how you repair the world. And, and just felt like if you had any agency whatsoever, that was your job. And that's how I grew up. And from basically junior high school on, that's what I've been doing. And education and labor became really important to me because the three ways that regular folk have any power in life is through elections and, electing people who will actually serve their needs as opposed to billionaires' needs or, some corrupt bargain.
Right.
Education, because that creates the skill and knowledge so that a person can navigate their own life. And labor, because most of us are not born, to borrow Ann Richards' terminology, with a silver spoon in your mouth.
Yeah.
And so how do you create power, economic power? The labor movement is how you do it. So think about it. I mean, I think about it this way, even in times like this, that I am one of the luckiest people alive because every single day I get to fight for, enable regular folks to have some economic opportunity, some education opportunity, some equal opportunity to make their lives and their families' lives better.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, that's, I feel like it's an incredible privilege to be able to do this work. And in many ways, I get so much more out of it than those I seek to help out.
Exactly.
And always say that action is the best antidote for anxiety. And so
I love that. I'm going to borrow that.
Please do.
I love it.
Yeah. And right now in this moment, you know, obviously you mentioned those three things, elections, education, and workers, labor, unions. No coincidence, those are three things that are under attack right now, because that's how we stand up to fascism. It's vital right now that we build resilience in our activism. This is definitely a marathon, and it's going to be a very tough few years, to say the least. You've been doing this for a long time. How do you take care of yourself during these urgent and relentless fights? What do you do for downtime? I mean, downtime.
Walk my dog.
That's a silly question.
Walk my dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See friends. Have potlucks. Actually find, you know, what we've started doing. First off, again, I found the love of my life when I was older, in my 50s. And so we've been, and she happens to be a rabbi, and we often tease, we got married in 2018, and we often tease that if Trump gets rid of the right to marry, we'll fight for it again, and then we'll have a great dance party to when we get married again. but, you know, in that tease is some joy. And I think that some of us, because I've watched the country travel a really far positive distance when it comes to much of LGBTQ rights. The acceptance has been pretty formidable until this last, you know, 2 years or so, when, you know, trans issues have gotten so weaponized.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is that as you fight, joy, and my wife, Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, says this a lot, joy is an act of political and spiritual resistance. And if you create some joy, even in the darkest hours, you can find some light. And that's what we have to try to do. We have to find some light, some joy, some connection. I think of the word relationship as you talk about resilience, because I think they go hand in hand. You develop resilience when you start developing relationships in community with others. People don't have to be your best friends.
Yeah.
But like, for instance, in our building in November, I don't remember, I think it was late November, we just put a sign up and said, we're going to have a potluck, or a, you know, we're going to have basically a wine and cheese party one Sunday afternoon. And we had 30 or 40 of our neighbors show up. We're all sitting around just talking to each other, creating community. So, you know, I tease about walking my dog. I love doing that. But it's also being with others, creating relationships, finding some joy, even in these moments of great terror. But it really begins with creating some relationships and creating community.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we are more isolated from each other than we ever have before. Of course, the pandemic, you know, did a huge number, especially on our children, who literally were, you know, at home and are at a deficit now with just basic social skills and stuff like that.
Right.
And mental health challenges as a result of that.
In fact, I would say, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No,
I
not
would
at all.
Say that the displacement by social media of relationships is the profound after effect of COVID. You know, it was starting to happen before, but if you look at now that we're like 5 years out of the start of COVID, that was the profound social effect. And look at what the tech companies are doing. We were close to getting COPPA and COSA passed, and Facebook walked in to kind of blow that up. And the same, and this whole notion of their profits and their autonomy is more important than our children's mental health.
Yeah.
And if I think back to Think about cigarettes. Think about alcohol.
Yeah.
This is what we're seeing with the addiction to social media and to loneliness. We can't make our kids. We seem unable to make our kids the priority here. We seem to be always siding with or ceding to the tech companies, who basically have complete carte blanche in terms of how they how they maneuver through life.
I mean, they literally have the keys right now. So it's but you know, the simple remedy right now in these times is just what you said, and it's to be intentional. And it's not always comfortable. I mean, some people are introverts and have a kind of, their social battery gets drained. But I love what you did in just opening up your home as a potluck to folks, and just being intentional about just, you know, getting together with people. We need that, especially during these difficult times. So
the other thing I'm trying to do is that, you know, take you, take me. We've been at organizing for a very long time. So it's very intuitive to us. So what I've tried to do is kind of use my teacher hat again, mm-hmm. and try to say, okay, how do we teach people how to organize again, how to mobilize again? Because, you know, a lot of people haven't mobilized or organized since the onset of COVID. There's still a lot of times when we go and use Zoom instead of being in person. And so what I've been trying to do is say to people, think about things they have, like Steve Bannon and others, they have their C's.
Yeah.
Chaos, confusion, I would say cronyism, corruption. So, and then we have our C's, which is how you support community. Mm-hmm. How you have some courage, how you fight, not only in the courts, but the court of public opinion, not only in Congress, but maybe in commerce. Take it to the ground that these billionaires are on, and how we communicate in a way that we are actually really communicating with people, not passing them by, and meeting people where they are. And so I've been thinking about, you know, organizing in this moment, you know, in terms of the these C words, courage, community, communication, fighting in the courts and the court of public opinion, fighting in the Congress, but also fighting, you know, commercially. And I'm finding that when people want to have agency and they want to be engaged, they start thinking, oh, I can do something around those lines. I can hold a poster. I can do a blue sky skeet. I can, you know, be on a conference call with people. I can be at an Indivisible or town meeting that a congressperson does. And so that's kind of what I think we need to also be doing in this moment. And so people can figure out their place in all of this stuff and feel like, okay, I can do something.
Yeah. That's so powerful. So you talked about courts. Let's talk about AFT's lawsuit, which you just got some very good news about, against Doge, resulting in a court order to stop taking private data of American citizens from the Department of Education and OPM. Can you break down the suit and what are the next steps?
Sure. So, you know, what I think people were shocked about, you know, is, you know, I guess people actually didn't take Trump and Musk seriously when he started this new entity called Doge. And notice how quickly Vivek Ramaswamy was, cut out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
I'll admit, because they had no congressional, you know, it wasn't a real agency. I'll admit the same thing. I was like, well, you know, what is this? This is just something on the sidelines. It's all for show.
Yeah. So, you know, but if you respect the rule of law, then of course you'd be completely surprised by this. But what fascists and authoritarians have, and we actually have to learn this, is to have the imagination that their power means more to them than any kind of civil, moral, democratic, constitutional rules of engagement. Like, they'll use the rules of the Constitution when it benefits them, but they will discard it when it doesn't. And so, and then basically say, catch me, right. Because the courts are a slow process. So I think that a lot of us were shocked about that first time we saw Doge not only going into the Treasury, but taking people's personal information.
Yeah.
So this then became a pattern. So it was not simply looking at or appropriating, which is what AI does when you have all this information from Social Security, but all this tax information. So then we started saying, what's our lane? And there, and the Department of Education is like one of the biggest banks in America. Mm. It basically holds the portal or is the conduit for every parent who is filing for financial aid for their kid to go to college. That's millions of people. And it's also the portal to the student debt industry, because when Sallie Mae and Freddie Mac and all of them kind of were going under in 2008, it was all moved to the Department of Education. So every one of the 45 million people who have some kind of student debt right now basically go through the Department of Education and give their vital personal financial data. So we basically said, no one, no parent, no student debt borrower ever, ever said, okay, Doge and Elon Musk, you get to use our personal information.
Right.
They never did that when they filed. It was for a specific purpose.
And if they were given if they were given the option, it would have been a resounding no, too.
Correct. But even without being given the option, they never made that choice.
Yeah.
It's the freedom for them to keep their information only for that purpose. So consequently, we went to the court and we said, this is ultra virus. Sorry for a legal word. This is, no, it's illegal. There's a Privacy Act. It is only for the intended purpose. And, you know, we had a 3-hour hearing. You know, we did other things as well, but there was a 3-hour hearing. And of course, the new Justice Department lawyers basically went blah, 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 because they have nothing to say. Mm. And they couldn't even say to the judge, we're not going to do that, because of course they're going to do that, because of course they're utilizing the information.
Yeah.
And, you know, on Monday morning, she said, no, she said, she didn't completely buy our, you know, relief, which was stop them from being anywhere. But she basically said, no, they can't do this. That's a violation of the Privacy Act. And the plaintiffs, including us and others, are going to win on the merits. So, you know, the next step is, because of course, do we really know? Of course, we don't know what they're doing or not doing. But this is the next step, which is if we'll try to get discovery. But if we see that somebody has gotten hurt by data that they've used in, or that they've given to the Department of Education, or that they give given to the IRS, or they give it to the, you know, Social Security, we're going to go for damages.
Yeah.
We're going to go for punitive damages. Because if you actually violate a court order, then we have a right to say, no, we need enough damages to actually stop the bad behavior. So this is the first step of several steps that we'll take. But look who's filing these suits. It's civil society.
Yeah.
It's the attorney generals. It's the labor movement. It's basically us standing in the stead of the American people to say, no, this is not what anybody voted for. They didn't vote to have their personal financial data appropriated. They voted to get the prices of, you know, those who voted for Donald Trump, they voted for the prices of eggs to go down. And those who didn't vote for Donald Trump, they voted for a better life. So, you know, that's why I think you're starting to see his numbers fall.
Yeah.
That's why you're starting to see Musk's numbers go really down in the basement. This is not America.
Yeah. Well, that's encouraging to hear that. And it makes sense because a lot of people wonder about any of these lawsuits, about, you know, the efficacy of them when you have the audaciousness of lawlessness and also knowing that they hope that their, you know, bought and paid for Supreme Court will ultimately rule in their favor. But right. the civil suits that can come after individuals and stuff associated with this is very compelling, and that's gonna hurt them and deter them. So
right. But I think, Steve, the point I think you're making, which I think is really important, is that frankly nobody's gonna save us but ourselves, and that goes back to community.
Yeah.
And whether it's the Blue Sky community or whether it's like a church or a synagogue or a school or, you know, whatever reviving communities. It's kind of what King said in his last book, Chaos versus Community. How we together act together as the people of the United States and say, no, you're not a king, you're not a dictator. We have a constitution that we fought for in a revolution almost 250 years ago. It's not perfect, but we didn't buy into this. And this yeah. is not what we wanted. But it really is going to have to be people locally creating the pressure, both not only in the court, but the court of public opinion.
Right.
And once you create the pressure in the court of public opinion, you're also creating the pressure in terms of Congress. But that's why I'm also saying we got to create the pressure. These billionaires, what do they want? They want less taxes. They want more profits. So we got to create the pressure in terms of commerce, too, and their commercial interests as well. And so that's why I'm thinking about how community works in these ways. And we're not going to win everything because they got all the power right now. But the creation and the acting together, building power together, that's how the U.S. won the revolution in 1776. That's how Washington won. That's how we'll win now in terms of keeping our democracy and trying to, you know, make good with Americans about the working class and the middle class and poor folks have an opportunity to succeed for themselves and their families.
Yeah. And I'll say, because that was just a perfect segue to my next question, all of these movements, as I mentioned earlier, have been led by union organizing and worker-led organizing. And there's a resurgence right now in support for labor unions. In a big way, I'm personally a 30-year union member myself, proud union member. I firmly believe that the fight to stop fascism and kleptocracy in our country will be and is being led by union organizers such as yourself. There's a very good reason, like we said, why the Trump regime is trying to dismantle unions. So what can everyday people, whether they're in a union or not, do right now to support labor organizing?
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for the question. And I get that question a lot from people because people feel really powerless and really hopeless. So number one, if people are on social media and they want to kind of weigh in a bunch of different things, that's a community in and of itself. And it's really important to be part of some of these communities. That's why, you know, I love these starter packs on Blue Sky. I love the Blue Sky community just because the more it grows, the more it competes with Elon Musk. Remember, it's a total yeah. takeover of Twitter. So Blue Sky now is 32 million people. What if it had 50 million people? What if it had 100 million people? What if all of a sudden people were getting their news from not an entity that created an algorithm that squashed different things and
right.
made you see only Elon Musk stuff? This is so I raise that as a simple piece because anyone, you don't have to pay money to be part of Blue Sky. You just have to open an account. It's something that can create a community. Number two, pick something locally that you want to do or change. You know, whether it's your synagogue, mosque, or church, whether it's the local PTA or local school, whether it's a cleanup of a garden, there's whether it's a, you know, one of the civic organizations in a neighborhood, pick something, anything that you want to do. And like my wife, as I said, she started something new called the Beacon Project, where they're going to be a split screen in terms of cruelty versus, you know, doing something that lifts up goodness. And that's in New York City. And there's an open WhatsApp group called the Beacon Group that they have created. There's lots of these WhatsApp communities as well. Pick something and just get involved and do something. And that's going to create agency and a sense of I'm doing something good for my community, my family, the people that, you know, I serve. That's one way of doing it. The second way, the way we're doing it, is we're taking on issues that are really important to people. So we're taking on, for example, the budget cuts to education. We know from reading Project 2025 and from listening to Donald Trump and Linda McMahon, but more importantly, all the people that supported Trump, they want to dismantle public schools.
Yeah.
They want to create a fragmented education system. So their kids could go to private schools, but they don't really care about other people's children. And so they, you know, they want to smear it. They want to undermine it. They want to defund it. That's why they're talking about the dismantlement of the Department of Education.
Yeah.
Now, my union, you know, when the Department of Education was created, we weren't so keen about it. We said, keep it in HEW. But the point is, the Department of Education gives out really important funding directly for students in schools. So we talk about literacy a lot. Reading specialists are funded by something called Title I that help kids learn to read. Paraprofessionals that work as assistant teachers in schools all throughout America to help kids with disabilities, to help kids in who are poor. Those are funded by something called Title I.
Yeah.
The food programs, the going to college, first generation kids going to college, the career tech ed programs. I can go on and on and on. These are federal programs done in a formula that actually, because it's done based on poverty, goes more to red states than to blue states. This is the money they want to either take to use for tax cuts for billionaires, or alternatively, put them in what I call block grants so that a state like, you know, like an Abbott in Texas could say, oh, I want it to go all for vouchers.
Right.
Instead of, because states are the ones that control schools right now. They've always have. And, you know, they basically always will. It's not Donald Trump is wrong to say it should go back to states because states control it. So what we're doing is we're putting a face on this. We're saying this stuff, these funds really matter. Now, every teacher I know knows that they really matter, but and a lot of parents know that they really matter. But basically, it's only one out of three Americans who have kids in schools anymore right now. So March 4th, march for our kids. Protect our kids locally, all across the country. We're educating people about what this really is about and how we need to, as America, make sure we keep these federal funds, not for billionaires, not for vouchers, not in block grants, so, you know, a state governor could decide what to do, but keep them for the kids so that the kids get the reading specialists they need, so that the kids get the OT or PT that they need if a kid needs that. This is what we are talking about, so that kids have the kind of career paths so they can become a welder or go to college. Those are the things that the federal government actually funds. So anyone who wants to be engaged with us on any of these things on March 4th, in terms of your local school or one of our local units, we are starting to have plans on mobilize all throughout the country. Go to our website, aft.org. You'll see the different events that are going to happen all day on March 4th to actually protect our kids, protect our communities, and make sure we are funding our future.
So
and we'll see other things, post office, fighting for the post office, fighting on other things, ensuring that people, not profits, that regular folks have an opportunity for a better life for their families, not that we basically take the store and give even more to the billionaires who now have more wealth and more income inequality than we've had probably since, sorry, now I'll be the social studies teacher, since the, you know, Gilded Age of the 1920s. Yep.
Amazing. That was all so inspiring and right on. And of course, this attack on education, you are the last person I need to tell this to, has been going on for decades and decades, too. And there's a good reason why they attack education.
Since, frankly, Brown versus Board of Education.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since that case, we have seen an ideological attempt to basically use what they call choice, which is essentially the school's choice, not an individual parent's choice. They have been using that argument to fragment and defund public education since Brown.
Yeah. And but I do believe and know that the vast majority of Americans support teachers, and they certainly support their kids. And so we will be standing up with you on March 4th. We'll have the link to these events in our show notes. So click on those links, sign up for an event. Of course, you know, this is what our people need to be doing. And you talk about the convergence of your three C's, I think it was. And, you know,
oh my God, that's another C. That's another C, Steve. Convergence.
Convergence. Oh, I love some alliteration. Yeah. But yeah, if we want to fight back, if we want to support these court decisions, we need to be in the street showing that we are standing up and we're paying attention. Because if we're not, then that's when they're going to be bold and ignore that. So thank you for that. And this has been an incredibly inspiring conversation. Not that I'm surprised, because you're a very inspiring person, and I'm thrilled to have had the opportunity. Really quick, before I let you go, our final question is, what is bringing you hope right now?
Look, and this is not, okay, this is not a kitschy answer. Conversations like this bring me hope. The fact that
I'll take it. I love that answer.
It's just, you know, we are in a race between hope and fear. And when you have, you know, we may call him a snake oil salesman, but Donald Trump has learned how to communicate very effectively with people. He has spent his whole life doing that and learning that. And the propaganda and the mistruths and all of that stuff, you can analyze it all we want. The key is, and you said this before at the beginning of the show, action is the antidote to anxiety. When what gives me hope is that there are Americans all throughout the country. I've been honored to be in this job for a long time. I have met many Americans. People want a better life. They want a better life for their kids. The kind of through line in America is that we will give our kids and our grandkids more so that they can do better and have access to more of the American dream than we did. And that is America. America didn't vote for this. What gives me hope is when I see people basically standing up, when I see the courage of a Janet Mills, who basically said, I'll see you in court, Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. When I see people willing to put their names on a lawsuit and say, I'm not going to take this. When I see Vladimir Zelensky say, I'll give up my job to get NATO membership for the people of Ukraine. When I see us together saying, no, this is not who we are as a people, what gives me hope is that there is something called America that is about opportunity and acceptance, and about our days, our forthcoming days should be better than what we have had. Now, it's not the first time we've had some one who's been the president who doesn't believe in those values. But it is up to us in large and small ways to actually fight for the America we believe in, a land of freedom, a land of opportunity, a land of acceptance, and a land that we should all not only be proud of, but be proud that it is there.
Randy Weingarten, thank you so much for being with me. This was a tremendous pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, now we come to our listener engagement section. This is where we talk about things that you have told us about what you're doing right now. And we've got a phone number that you can call, 818-824-4286, where you can leave us a message and tell us about what you're doing. You can email us at hello@practivistpod.com and send pictures if you do email us. We want to see what you're doing. But Steve, why don't you start us off with the first one that you got that you like so much?
Yeah, this is from Linda and David, and they sent us an email. It said, my husband and I stood on a busy highway across from a Tesla dealership in the Charlotte area. We each stood and held a sign that protested Elon for an hour on Saturday, and we're in our 70s. And they shared this great picture. It says, Tesla funds fascists, and no one elected Elon, and it's just the two of them, you know, being there, making their voices heard, and making their presence known in their 70s, and this is really awesome. This just, you know, I loved seeing this, and I'm so grateful to Linda and David for sending this in.
Yeah, and for all the people who went out to Tesla protest this week, thank you, all of you. I mean, it really is, I agree, totally inspiring. And I love Charlotte, North Carolina also. Just love it there. Anyway,
Beautiful part of the country.
Beautiful part of the country. Canvas there for Kamala Harris. Bittersweet memories, but still beautiful part. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we won't go there. But yeah, so, and I put in the newsletter on Monday. I asked people to drop in the comments what they'd done over the weekend to sort of help with the resistance. And the response was overwhelming, unbelievable. Yeah. I can't even describe, like, I hope if you subscribe that you will go and read the comments because it was really amazing. I chose just a couple at random. We had one person say, my partner and I put together a Tesla takedown protest in Marin County on the fly. Indivisible Marin got wind of it, and we had 200 plus show up with less than one day's notice.
Amazing.
I had a person say, I attended a protest in Santa Rosa, California, focusing on our sheriff's decision to collaborate with ICE. And I talked to the news station. I got interviewed on camera, and I ended up on the 11 p.m. news, which I think is great. And then do you want to read that last one?
Representative Pete Stauber, Minnesota 8, has never held an in-person town hall. I took part in one of the protests this weekend, which in part was asking him, where are you, Pete? Asking for a town hall and for him to actually honor his oath. It was estimated by one person that 400 protesters attended. Even if that number is high, it was easily 200 plus. Sticky notes and signs were left on his door. When the local news reached out to him for comment, they received no answer. Go figure.
Wow.
No surprise there. I will keep on calling him. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to keep on calling. And like I said, we'll likely be standing up these empty chair town halls, which are really effective too.
Yeah. And don't forget, Indivisible always recommends, they've got a whole toolkit on how to do an empty chair town hall. And they suggest you could put a cardboard cutout of the person at the front of the room, or you can do a picture of a chicken. They often say, get some kind of chicken and put it up there at the front and then post it on social media. Publicly shaming these people is really important. Don't be afraid. Shame them, because what they're doing is shameful. So, and I love chickens, don't get me wrong. I think chickens are morally superior to most of these lawmakers, but still, the chicken metaphor is something we can all understand, so we should use it.
Not to denigrate chickens, just to illustrate a point. Yeah,
yeah.
Got it. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget that all of the links for our actions are in the show notes, so don't just listen. Click those links and take action. Please subscribe, rate, and review our show on Apple. Got some nice reviews this week. Thank you for that. YouTube or wherever else you are listening. And share our show with your friends and family members. Make sure they are taking action to help us win as well. If you are able to support our show on Patreon or Substack, we would be very grateful for that. And you will get an ad-free version of our show as well. We will be back next week with more Practivist Pod. And until then, don't forget, hope is in action.
Have a good week, y'all.
Stay strong. It won't be long.
Yeah, yeah.
We will build a better world.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.